The European project took a major step forward today with the signing of a new treaty. Will this lead to a larger role for Europe on the world scene? Can 27 different nations create a single powerful state under one law? A closer look tells the story. You're listening to Longitude. It's Thursday, December 12, 2007. I'm Darris McNeely. More than 2 years after voters in France and the Netherlands vetoed the proposed European Constitution, leaders have now signed a version of the same constitution with a different name and a few adjustments. It must still be ratified by each member nation, but it is unlikely to be put to a popular vote in most nations except for Britain and Ireland. Here is an excerpt from today's Financial Times, and I quote, EU leaders reacted by dropping the concept of a constitution from their treaty, but keeping as much of the document's detail as possible. Most of the key changes to the EU's institutions, like the European Council, which represents national governments, the European Commission, and the European Parliament, remain in place in the new Lisbon Treaty. Like its forerunner, the treaty extends the use of qualified majority voting, notably in matters affecting justice and interior affairs. It keeps the new voting rules designed to smooth the EU decision-making process now that there are 27 member states, which is up from 15 as in 2004. The Lisbon Treaty is an immensely complicated document with, in its English version, 175 pages of treaty text, 86 pages of protocols, a 25-page annex, and a 26-page final act containing 65 separate declarations. End of quote from the Financial Times. Now, many critics of this treaty see it as a stealth step toward greater centralized control in Brussels, the headquarters of the EU, and a loss of national sovereignty as a result. The treaty establishes a legally new European Union in the form of a supranational federal state which is separate and superior to the member states. Just as in the United States of America, we have what the states are subservient to the state, such as Indiana is subservient to the greater federal authority, and as in federal Germany, the state of Prussia is subservient to Germany, so now in the European Union, the individual member states, such as Great Britain, France, Ireland, Germany, France, Poland, and others, they will be subservient to the greater European Union. The EU will now have authority to make agreements with other states by which all member states would be bound. Now, this would be done providing the EU with a full legal personality and corporate existence. All powers of a state would be exercised by the EU. People living in the EU technically become citizens of the EU, the European Union, and they would then hold dual citizenship, but they would owe ultimate obedience to the EU. Now, how exactly will this develop in practical fact is yet to be seen and determined. Frankly, it's hard to imagine a Frenchman thinking of his or her as anything other than French, and the same for any other EU, quote, citizen. This is no small matter in Europe and will be a significant reason why, in the Bible, we read a description in the end time of a power that is to arise that is described as a mixture of iron and clay. You can read about that in the second chapter of Daniel, verse 41, that great image that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed, and the interpretation thereof, the feet of that image, which was a mixture of iron and clay, represents an end-time confederation of nations that are going to arise. The Bible describes as a power, a beast power. And looking at what we see coming together in Europe, with so many different civilizations and languages and cultures and ethnicities, we have a perfect recipe for exactly what the Bible describes. Now, getting back to this treaty, this new treaty will give the larger states more voting power, which means Germany and France are two immediate winners. If these two nations get two other nations to vote with them, they would have the power to control passage of any European Union law. This new double majority voting system makes population the key criterion of influence. Now, if Turkey, which has applied for admission to the EU and is being discussed, if Turkey were to gain admission to the European Union, Turkey then would become the largest state by population and therefore have a tremendous amount of weight in decision-making within the EU. Let me ask you, does anyone really think Turkey will be granted membership? The European Union will also have additional power to make laws binding on all member states. Areas such as criminal and civil law, justice, immigration, and energy policy would fall under the authority of the EU. It is a major increase of EU powers, as well as a decrease of power to the separate national parliaments and legislatures, which means the lives of each citizen of the EU will be managed by the European Union power structure. Gradually, all the functional aspects of everyday life, the infrastructure that makes a town, a city, or a state work, will be controlled by EU policy and those who make policy. Under this treaty, the European Union and its Court of Justice will have the final power to decide issues of human and civil rights in all areas of law. The European Union Charter of Fundamental Rights would become binding upon all member states. All in all, 68 new areas of law making now come under EU authority. Still evolving are critical areas of foreign and economic policy. They are not fully developed under this treaty, and of course the question of who speaks for the EU, who or what is the ultimate leadership role, has yet to be determined. Until these areas are fleshed out, along with a common military posture, you have a bureaucratic behemoth with nowhere to go and no one to lead it. That will come later, as Revelation 13 shows, in the form of political and religious leaders who give voice and authority to a system destined to influence the entire world. Germany and France are currently sparring over their respective leadership roles within the EU. Germany is asserting itself. It sees itself as the natural leader in Europe by virtue of its population, location, and economic heft. France is no more likely to concede the natural leadership of Germany under traditional power politics than it was to concede American leadership of the free world when Charles de Gaulle was alive. The two are tussling over matters of currency, influence, and the Constitution. In short, their posturing is over who will lead Europe, and this is the centuries-old question. In some ways, Europe is beginning to look more like 1913 rather than 2007, and that should make everyone sit up and take notice. I'll talk more of this in my next podcast. For Longitude, I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.